Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Jeremy Riss about Alien Science. Of course, his YouTube channel, Alien Scientist, and his website with the same name. A lot of interesting stuff there. And we've been, detailing some of his ideas, some of the new developments out there when it comes to technology and physics and everything else. And we're going to kind of continue and discuss more about this. I do want to get into some of the 9/11 stuff later. He has a great video up there right now featuring some of Mark Gaffney's work. And so it's really good stuff. But why don't we... I wanted to ask you more about something you mentioned at the end of the first hour, Jeremy, in terms of the grace. We talked about genetic improvements, that if we had an alien race, basically, if they would do genetic improvements to themselves, that they could possibly end up looking like the Grey. We've heard this in different settings before, that the Greys are basically kind of biological robots, if you will, and it kind of fits nicely into that category as well. What, in your opinion, then, tell us a little bit more about the Greys, what they actually are, and if you have any thoughts or ideas about their purpose, what they're doing here.
Well, first off, this is all, of course, hypothetical, and just brainstorming of what genetic advancement might bring to the human race if we were to continue it for the process of, say, 1,000 years, well into a spacefaring civilization. You know, assuming that we don't, you know, destroy ourselves before we reach that. So it's kind of, that's kind of the hypothesis that I, or the route of thinking that I took and led viewers through in my video on sort of the biology aspect. Of course, I'm not really a biologist, but you can just sort of imagine what happens when the technology and our understanding of biomimicry reaches the level where we're able to essentially play God and do whatever we'd like and make any sort of advantageous genetic adjustments to our own DNA to possibly benefit us. And I was considered, you know, what if you were to make it the alien, you know, a hybrid spacefaring race? You know, of course it would be alien eventually once you got far enough away genetically. But a human in origin, and what would happen to us, you know, say 1,000 years in the future. And I think something, you know, similar to an alien gray is an adequate description, of course. You mentioned, you know, biological robots, and there's certainly some aspects of cybernetics that I would think could be incorporated in such a, you know, the idea of the Borg, or you know, these are not new ideas to our sci-fi world. Star Trek and many others have talked about, you know, cybernetics and brain implants. You know, what if you could? One of my ideas is like, what if you had, you know, the internet plugged into your head? It's like you could just go and email people or look up stuff online without even needing a secondary device. You could Google information and just get access to this World Wide Web through a cybernetic implant that plugged directly into your brain, or even a calculator. So you could do math problems like in a different part of your brain that had this sort of built-in calculator.
Oh yeah, and that's coming too. They're kind of beginning to promote those things a little bit right now.
Yeah, and they have different interfaces that not necessarily directly connected to your neural system, but also you know, ways that it can pick up brain waves, and you can sort of control these things with just thinking about a certain thought or moving your eyes in a certain direction or
yeah.
You know, even those new retinal displays where you can get like contact lenses, and it's not long till those types of things are interfaced with some sort of a computerized system where you could just look at different things, and then it could eventually be implanted where it's no longer on a contact lens; it's just on your the iris of your regular eye, and you could control a computer screen and all through that. It would just appear to you on this retinal display as if it were actually there. And depending on whatever you looked at and thought a certain thought, you could click through, but just like a mouse. It's really. I mean, just to think of what technology could take us to. But in terms of, you know, back to this idea of the alien gray, I guess, you know, what if we were to advance those types of things, you know, it make our eyes so that they're able to see, you know, in super high definition and in a larger range of vision. And of course, you need bigger eyes, and you'd need the ability also to see in different frequencies than just the visible, you know, infrared and ultraviolet and even maybe... possibly microwave or other spectrums as well, that different data could be broadcast on. There's all different types of ideas for you know, where you could go with that type of technology, and It's basically playing God. I mean, at that point, once you can hack with DNA, it's you're on another level. You know,
is there any evidence in your view that what we're witnessing out there right now, or what some people are claiming that they're witnessing in terms of, you know, abductions and even seeing the UFOs, the ships and everything else, that those actually are part of a black ops program here on Earth, that they're the illusion is there to believe that these are actually aliens and whatnot, but these might actually be you know, genetic creations from a black ops program here on Earth.
Right, they could possibly be super advanced humans, maybe from a black ops program here. There's other theories that psychologists say that we just identify this type of a being, you know, that we over exaggerate the size of the eyes just as some sort of innate psychological instinct or something that is. And, you know, why different cultures have drawn pictures of these types of things around in different cave paintings and stuff. And I don't know, that stuff's interesting too. You know, and certainly the stories about people who claim to have been abducted and interacted with these beings, certainly, you know, very interesting, and it's worthy of consideration, I'd say. I tend to think that it makes a lot of sense that if there were these intelligent beings out there, that they would utilize things like invisibility technology to hide from us, and that they could use psychological techniques that I'm sure they'd understand completely to basically wipe your memory and can hypnotize you so that you couldn't remember it. And the harder that you tried to remember it, the more distant that memory would become. And there's different, there's all sorts of these techniques that can be achieved in subjects through hypnosis. And those techniques were to be advanced to that level, I'm sure that you could have, it wouldn't need this neuralizer device where it flashes you like in Men in Black. Mm-hmm. It's more like a hypnotic programming where they would convince you of this beyond any reasonable doubt. And of course, they could show you things that would make you, I mean, especially religious people, they could give them a vision that would, you know, could really mess with their mind. And
that's right.
You know, all these different techniques and tactics that could be used psychologically, it's not impossible to imagine that, you know, this might be happening. And of course, my belief that if aliens are in fact visiting the planet, which they may be, there's a lot of evidence which is pretty interesting, and a lot of unexplainable phenomenon that are out there that this certainly would explain. I mean, of course, I look at shows like Ancient Aliens where it's like, we can't explain this, therefore aliens. It's sort of like the logic people have used to make fun of that approach, you know, like just because you can't explain the logic doesn't mean it was there for aliens, even though aliens would explain and fill in all the logical gaps. It's kind of like we have to be careful of those types of things as well, because
it's kind of like dark matter in a way. Then it's like we have this variable, we don't know what it is, but if we insert this thing, we can explain it, right? It's kind of same idea.
And that's the things we have to watch out for, and they're all over the place, as you mentioned, with dark matter and physics, that we can't fill in the gaps, but this works to fill in the gaps, but we don't have evidence of this.
Yeah.
So therefore, you know, it's one of those types of things where, yeah, it works. It will fill in the gaps and explain everything, but that doesn't mean that that's what it is or that's what's right. And it's sort of a trick that a lot of people get caught up in, you know, just because you can't explain everything anyway, doesn't mean that it's this something so exotic that, you know, the most exotic thing that you could think of that could explain this. You know, there are sometimes and often other explanations for a lot of events and phenomena. As far as, you know, black ops programs for, I'm sure they have black ops programs for, they say they have evidence of super soldier program, you know. I mean, the whole theory of Captain America was experimenting with steroids on soldiers and, you know, back in the 40s to try and create a super soldier. And the military has done all sorts of research into that. I mean,
for sure.
Biometric implants, you know, ability to make your muscles tense up strong, you know, make you stronger, faster. You know, these types of technologies, there's no doubt that they've researched that type of stuff.
How far ahead do you think they are with it when it comes to super soldier programs and everything else?
It's hard to say because with a lot of things like anything else, they've run into a lot of complications where, you know, the results may vary drastically. You know, you could have this drug that works on this one guy, or you know, it doesn't work on another. And then, you know, these biometric implants or neurological implants with it, they can do to basically increase your muscle strength or the agility of your body and stuff like that. I don't know. There's definitely those types of things. But as far as, you know, creating this intelligent spacefaring race that I would describe as the Greys, it's just, I think that what I'm thinking of there is quite 100 or so years off from, you know, that even if they started that back in the 40s, when we know they were, you know, working on super soldiers for the World War II and stuff, with Germany, I don't think that they could have progressed in the years since then to the point where they have these fully capable alien, you know, like alien gray type spacefaring superhumans. That seems a little bit outlandish to me. The psychological explanation makes some sense, but I think it does make the most sense that that there could be these, you know, beings out there that are visiting and they just keep themselves well hidden from us. And for obvious reasons, one of the things I refer people to often is the Star Trek episode "Who Watches the Watchers," where we're observing this Copper Age civilization on some distant star system doing it from an invisible remote location. And then accidentally, by chance, someone from that, something fails, and they see us, and they come into contact with us, and they just think that we're supernatural beings because they don't understand, you know?
That's right.
And they start believing in gods, and it spreads all this belief and religion and this, because they didn't understand what they were interacting with. And then they tried to, like, explain it to them and show them, but it only seemed to make things worse. He takes the girl up on the spaceship and shows her the planet from above the clouds. And she's like, you have to be gods. Like, she's just like, wow. Yeah. You know, like,
yeah.
And, it's just interesting to think of, you know, why they wouldn't want to interact with us, because they're so far advanced. And what would be the point? And a lot of these people, these disclosure groups, think that we're just going to come out and the government's going to be like, yeah, they're here and we know all this stuff. And we can, you know, let the secret out of the bag and we have contact with this alien. I don't think the government has contact with alien race. I would think that an alien race would not want to make any contact or make contact as limited as possible with us. Just from, I have no evidence for any of this. This is just my own
sure. You
know, take on it. But, yep.
Jeremy, sorry to interrupt, but wouldn't that mean that the program that they're running, even if it's, we don't have to get into the idea if it's sinister or not at this point, but there is a lot of people talking about this. Again, that doesn't necessarily make it true, but there are some people who suggest we're talking about in the millions of people who are having some kind of experience. They're seeing something, they're having contact with something. You know, so our question is, well, what is it? Is it psychological? Is it physical? Is it, you know, spiritual, mental? What's going on here? But if that's the case, that it's a physical experience, they're really here, but at the same time, they're trying to cover their tracks. They're not doing a really good job, are they?
You wouldn't think with all these reports and everything and, you know, psychological manipulation and hypnosis and those techniques are only as good as the person's belief that, because a lot of those techniques work on belief and convincing this person that the hypnosis is real and actually works. Because the people that question hypnosis and don't believe it works can't be hypnotized. That's kind of an interesting thing.
Very interesting.
You know, like I can't be hypnotized, for example, because I'd always be like, this isn't working, is it? You know, I'd always be like curious and like second guessing it and thinking and doubting it. You know, it's much different. But I mean, these people in the millions, they do report this and to think, you know, certainly if this was a real phenomenon with a, you know, an extraterrestrial species, then there's certain reasons scientifically that we come up for them doing this. Certainly would make sense. They could learn quite a bit from those types of experiments and that type of monitoring. And in the more people that they could take as test subjects, the more they could really learn about us. And I mean, how else could they do it? They could plug into our internet and see what we're and monitor our progress and sort of in things like that, I'm sure. But I don't know. It's an interesting hypothesis, because mathematically they should be out there. although they're how do you come up with this resolution of the Fermi paradox? And I say one of them is if they're, you know, visiting us, but they're just doing it in secret. And that seems to make a lot of sense to me personally. I not saying that it's happening or that I, you know, I'm advocating this, but I really definitely believe it that they could be. And it would make a lot of sense to me that, and it would explain certainly a lot of these other things that I've come across in my research. But again, it's a difficult topic. And also, what I wanted to mention with groups that think the government's going to come out and disclose it all, and they're not. I don't think they ever would. Even if the little that I assume that they do know, I don't think they would ever really come out publicly with it. At least not anytime soon. But also, the people that are like think that the aliens are going to come down and make contact with us and just share all our technology. I think that's a cop out. That's like the people who believe the Messiah is going to come back soon and that Jesus is going to return and save everyone. We're going to have to do this ourselves. I hate to tell you.
Well, exactly. There's always been my point that if they truly are intelligent, an intelligent species, they know that it would be one of the worst things they could do, unless they want to completely take over the planet and start running things, which is a possibility. But then they would basically step back and say, you know, they have to do this themselves, because if we come into the picture now and pose as some kind of saviors, they will become incredibly dependent on us and everything we say, and they will effectively, end their own evolution effectively. And therefore we have to like stay back.
Everything. Yeah. It'll be right. Like Cortez's armies going to the Incas every civilization, every advanced civilization that's ever come into contact with a lower technology civilization, the lower civilization has ceased to exist time after time throughout history. It's common sense. Look what happened in Papua New Guinea, where they had these Aboriginal peoples in the Stone Age, and we've come in with our technology and look at what's happened as a result there. What they've had to deal with.
And this was some of the ideas, contemplated in the Brookings report about aliens as well. And that might actually be one of the strategies that they have at this point as well, from the point of view of government, that they know that, okay, there might be something out there. We have, these and these files. There's something going on. And although they eagerly might want to find out for themselves, within the program that runs officially, they would never say anything either, because they know that it would be have such a detrimental effect, basically.
Well, also, I want to talk about and relate this to Bigelow Aerospace and the whole secret space program that this aerospace company's got going on. And he's buying up all the MUFON files and all the information on UFOs and all this stuff he's probably even got access to the government's files on UFOs and finds out the stuff that they know.
Bigelow Aerospace, huh?
Yeah, they did a Jesse Ventura episode on this recently. I did a talk about this with two of my buddies that we were kind of discussing some of these ideas back and forth. I put a video up on that with Ed Fouché and Dan Benkert. He's the UFO expert guy. We did a kind of breakdown of this secret space program and the company Bigelow Aerospace down in Las Vegas. And they're a private space company that's super interested in alien and UFO technology and stuff. He was actually working with, I talk about this in the video, so I won't repeat stuff that I've already discussed there, but basically they're basically a private space company that's very interested in UFOs and getting access to these files and information. They bought out this ranch where apparently a lot of this, activity was going on at the ranch there. So the guy bought it out and basically rigged the whole place out with him, every kind of recording equipment and camera and sensory device that he could possibly, no expense was spared with this. And basically took all the data. He stopped doing it after a while because he said they got all the data that they needed. They got everything they wanted to know.
I think I recognize, I can't think of the name of the ranch now. Do you recall what the name was?
Skinwalker Ranch.
Skinwalker Ranch, that's right. So that was that guy. That's very interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Robert Bigelow. I think that's his name. But Bigelow Aerospace is their website. You can look this up. They don't have much information on the website. And there's all kinds of conspiracy theories about what this guy's up to and why he's so interested in UFO phenomenon and how that would relate to his space research. And what he's doing. He's a billionaire. I think he's building a space hotel right now up in space where he's going to charge, you know, millionaires a fee to go and stay at the space hotel. So, yeah. I mean, it's interesting, and I hope it will promote, you know, travel in space, but that's, you know, that seems to me like that's like a public front, you know, like that's his, that's what he's doing on the surface. And there's a reason why he's so interested in all this UFO stuff, because he's up to more than that. He doesn't share a lot of that publicly at all. And,
Wow. Interesting. Yeah. I have to go check out that video as well. I've not heard about this before, but, yeah, the Skinwalker Ranch, exactly. Robert Bigelow, he purchased that. And then he got rid of it, you said, as well?
After I think he still owns the ranch, but they stopped collecting data there. I don't know. They found whatever they were looking for, apparently. Or they I don't know. Who knows? They're quite an interesting organization, and I understand why there's a lot of conspiracy theories surrounding them, because you buy up all of, they bought out MUFON's files from one of the organizations of MUFON, and now they have there's an FAA protocol. I'll send you the link. I'll give you this to post to people. The FAA now has to forward all UFO reports to Bigelow Aerospace.
Oh, wow.
How interesting is that, though? They have a contract with the government to forward all the reports of UFOs to their organization.
I've never heard anything like that before, but all right, there we have it. So this might be the guy who's like taking some initiative that, well, maybe the government didn't do, right? They always talk about the MUFON was doing the work that the government should be doing, reporting and collecting data on this. But here's another guy on the scene now doing that.
Well, the thing is that the government has proven they're not good at doing that kind of stuff, and that the public is much better at it.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
It's just the way it works. I mean, military. Anytime the military touches something, it's I don't know. There's a lot of a lot of people that say a lot of stuff about the military and programs that they try to run and how effective and efficient they are. Of course, nothing's more efficient than, you know, interested people who are out there trying to do the service because that's what they want to do.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And there's enough people doing it, enough people interested in this topic now, and more people coming to the movement and getting in more, you know, getting more involved every day, that it's really amazing that, you know, that it's come to this. But the whole idea is this private space company and why they're so interested in that, and that they have all these UFO reports being sent directly to them. And I kind of view this as a, you know, this is like the way the government can basically take all their UFO research and move it far away from the scope of Freedom of Information Act inquiries the scope of government oversight. Because if it's done under a government agency or the military, there has to be oversight and a paper trail that people can go back and find. And what better way to erase all that than to move it all to a private corporation that's not owned or associated with the government?
That's right.
And
good point.
And they've done that with lots of other things as well.
So it might be, it might still effectively be, should we say funded and supported by, you know, covert operations or whatnot, but it's doing that through the guise of a private company, and therefore the records are not going to be accessible anymore. Yeah.
And shell companies. And that's how a lot of intelligence operations started to do their business, because if you know where all that money's coming from, if it's got a paycheck from, you know, Washington, D.C. or Langley, Virginia, it's pretty clear, you know, what that organization is doing. You know, you're doing it through these shell companies or private corporations or networks of, you know, companies within companies and associated companies and satellite companies, it's much harder to, you know, make that direct connection where you can be like, this is a CIA operation or this is a, you know, Pentagon operation. It's much harder to do that. And I talk a little bit about, you know, how those things get funded and where that sort of these underground systems of generating massive amounts of underground cash flow and money come from and are done. And they're done through a lot of illegal activities. And I've talked a bit about them too.
And then that goes around in another loop. Well, where we have people who are talking about, you know, the U.S. government and other governments, that they're actually, you know, they're registered in other parts of the world. Like, I think it's Puerto Rico or is it Costa Rica? I always mixed it up in regard. But the, you know, these are, the governments are actually also run like corporations. So at the end of it, you still cannot really get to the stuff that they really want to hide or really want to cover, hide away from the public anyway, basically.
Right. And I compared it in that video to what George H.W. Bush did when he became director of the CIA, just before Carter became president. And he claims to have cleaned up the CIA by closing all these departments down, but he didn't close them. He just moved them to private corporations and got them out of government oversight. It's like,
Yep. Is that Project Hammer you're talking about partially?
No. This is Project Hammer was 1991 and during the 80s. So the 80s, this was back in the 70s that Bush was CIA director, and he was only director for a little over a year.
Ah, okay.
And, yep. Just in time, conveniently for the House Select Committee on Assassinations, the reinvestigation of the Kennedy assassination and both Kennedy assassinations, actually. And it's sort of interesting that they would pick someone to become director of the CIA to sort of lay everything bare and get everything out in the open, who was, though it was unknown at the time, has many connections himself to the JFK assassination and a lot of the people who were suspected as being financiers or involved in that as well. And that's interesting. I go over a lot of that stuff on my website page under conspiracies on JFK. And a lot of that from Russ Baker's book, Family of Secrets, that he uncovered a lot of information about connecting George H.W. Bush to the Kennedy assassination, which would certainly explain his miraculous rise to political stardom shortly following the assassination. Came from virtually nowhere to becoming this politician, eventually becoming vice president, director of the CIA, then vice president, then president of the United States.
Yeah.
It's very revealing understanding, who's running the country and where our leaders come from. And there's sort of this secret history that's been swept under the rug and covered up for so long. And then you read this stuff and you're like, this makes perfect sense about why the world is the way it is. This oil tycoon, he got his start working for oil companies that were essentially intelligence fronts for the CIA. And how his connections to oil and intelligence have just shaped the whole history of our world over the past, 40, 50 years. It's just, it's amazing.
Do you think Bush 41, George Herbert Walker Bush, still is in charge of a lot of these programs? I mean, recently, allegedly, anyway, he's the number one
people. I mean, he's got more seniority than anyone else I could possibly imagine. I mean, he's the only U.S. president that's receives daily intelligence briefings. He's on top of stuff. I mean, he's been at the center of so much corruption and black operations, and that book, Family of Secrets, you got to get Russ Baker on your show.
Oh, we did have him on, actually. That's actually quite a few years ago.
We should have him back
and do an update, because it is good stuff, and he's done really good work on the research there, definitely.
Yeah, he's definitely a top guy. And Mark Gaffney as well, his new book was just very revealing about the who's who of the 9/11 attacks and tying it into George H.W. Bush as well with the Hammer Fund and that covert operations war chest that they created back in 1991 to fund the whole collapse of the Soviet Union, that they basically ended the Cold War through this covert economic infiltration and multilateral attack against the former USSR to just bring it to its knees. And there's so much information in that I wasn't covered in my Black 9/11 video that people can dig up and go look at for themselves. So I realized Michael Rupert went over in 2001, in March 2001, a couple months before 9/11, and was basically debriefing 40 of Russia's top economists on this whole strategy and what he believed was a covert operation against them. And then basically all the money that would have been able to trace that down and connect it back to the government and all the records and paper trail, all that went and disappeared on 9/11 just miraculously.
That's right. Wow.
And that just makes so much sense about, like what was, there's a big motives to it. I mean, it's like the best bang for your buck if you're a globalist elite. You know, what they got with 9/11, they got the perfect excuse to invade the Middle East and start an indefinite war on terror that could never end, and they would give us an unlimited excuse for military interventions in that part of the world. Shifted public opinion toward accepting and supporting that through the faces of the accused and everything that they showed us about, you know, bin Laden, and then bringing him back and reincarnating him only to kill him and dump his body with no pictures and no evidence.
Lovely story.
Yeah. And it's just so transparently fraudulent to anyone who's not caught up in their propaganda that I mean, to me at this point, I got into it back in, I think, 2005. I started researching it, and the whole thing with the buildings collapsing, it brought me back. I was a freshman in college on the day 9/11 happened. I was waiting for my physics class, and remember watching it on the TV with all my physics professors and us just being like, wow, those buildings should not have come down. Like, how did that happen? That had to have been blown up. This had to be like this is a big planned staged attack. And I knew it then, but I forgot about it. I just bought the official story and rolled with it for years. And only when I took a closer look at that and said, you know, hey, what does this really mean? And what happened with those buildings? And took a closer look at the demolitions and everything that went into it. I mean, this just brings it all together, though, with the money thing and why the World Trade Center would be targeted, this center of international finance with some of the largest, I mean, companies that affected world markets when those buildings went down and caused massive chaos and massive disruption to the whole world financial market.
Yeah.
And to think that the whole E.P. Heidner thing that Mark Gaffney points out, which sort of brings it all together, was the theory that you have to look at this as not a terrorist attack with just the motive that they wanted to cause harm to the United States because they hate our freedom or whatever excuse the government uses with their story. You have to look at 9/11 as a financial crime and who benefited financially from that, and look at, just follow the money. I mean, that's the advice Deep Throat gave us in the Pentagon Papers and that whole scandal. Follow the money. If you want to know who, just ask who benefits, you know?
Yeah.
Who benefited and how. And when you follow all those financial markets and look at those financial players that, you know, were taken out of the game that day and how that affected all those different markets and what was allowed to transpire with that SEC ruling to allow all credit to clear for the next, you know, 15 days or whatever, that would have allowed all those securities and bonds that were created in 1991 for that operation against the Soviet Union to just disappear into thin air, essentially.
Absolutely amazing. Yeah.
That really ties it together for me as far as the why. And then also I tie into that video into a lot of Kevin Ryan's research into the who and the how. And that's the stuff a lot of people seem interested in, and I've gotten a real positive response to, you know, all the players that I pointed out, and that all the CEOs of those companies inside the buildings that just miraculously survived the day. Some of them go because they went on TV to give us the first accounts of the official story before like anyone else could have known what was going on. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh wow, this is just, I mean, I can't believe these guys have just slipped under the radar for so long. They're just staring you in the face in that video, the way I cover it all, and the security companies and how they're all connected with the Bush family and all sorts of other operations. The CEOs of that company, Stratasec, and the corporate operating officer were former employees of Frank Carlucci that go back to 1991 with the whole, and even in the 80s with the Iran-Contra affair. And, you know, this whole thing with the collapse and the war against the Soviet Union, that would have transpired pretty much directly after that. And there's even more stuff than there was in the video. If you read all of Kevin Ryan's articles that I linked to, where I got most of that information from, and it just links up these people to, you know, some of the companies that were involved and possibly some of that looting of the Soviet Union and the crashing of their economy. BDM International is one. And those guys that I mentioned that were employees there that went to go run the companies that not only ran security at the World Trade Center, but they also ran security at Dulles International Airport and had contracts with United Airlines, which mm-hmm. controlled two out of the other three flights. So three out of the four flights right there that got hijacked on 9/11 were all had connections that could have been penetrated by this one security company that had their hands on all in every pie. You know, they had a finger in every pie, basically. And they also ran security at Los Alamos National Labs when nanothermites were first being developed. And that was another interesting connection. The other connection that I pointed out with that guy who was sat on the board of directors for that Japanese mining and machinery company, Paul Bremer, that was his offices was right in the impact zone of the building, and he missed work that day to give us the officials to blame bin Laden and say that we should demand the most severe military reaction possible. And that, you know, he missed work on 9/11 to give us that story on TV. Yet he has connections to a company, a mining and machinery company called Komatsu Dresser. And Dresser Industries is a longtime intelligence front that, you know, Bush used to work for way back in the day. That's where he got his start. And it's interesting how this just all ties together, and it's just given us this window into the whole underworld of covert activities and operatives and their whole network of operations that goes, it connects back to all their history. And it's just, it's like giving us a roadmap of, you know,
it's amazing, isn't it?
Oh, it's great. And would any of this be possible if it weren't for the internet?
And probably not. No. It's really interesting to see how you know, it's a web basically of private corporations, but people also just working within those corporations, being the right man on the right, you know, spot at the right time basically. But the more you look at this, do you get the sense that it's a private group that has private interest primarily, or is it still within the realm of military and or government, but it's gone fairly rogue, or it might even be an official because again, if we look at the status of some of these guys, they're high up there. They're you know, elite people. They're pulling this off. But are they? Do you think that they're doing it ultimately for their own little private group kind of thing, or is it a bigger agenda? Is there a bigger plan behind it? What do you think?
Well, certainly there is bigger plans behind it. But I mean, this is a clandestine, covert, and compartmentalized black operation. Essentially, where you have players on each stage of the gang working for at different levels of the plan and different stages, you know, like the guys that worked in the buildings, for instance, they didn't control NORAD. They had other guys in it, you know, who was controlling NORAD and issuing stand down orders on 9/11. That was Dick Cheney, but Dick Cheney wasn't necessarily rigging bombs inside the buildings before 9/11 in the months before. That was these other companies, and they all sort of, you can prove where they had their agenda, their own individual agendas. And yes, they do converge in different areas. And different people have tried to draw, you know, circles around different groups of these people and show like how, you know, it's this or it's that. But it's really, I think, a question that should be addressed on an individual level, because you have to look at what's going to motivate one single person to commit this crime. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, you can't convict a group of people, which I point out to a lot of people. You can't convict a group of people of a crime. You can only convict an individual, and you have to address means, motive, and opportunity on an individual level in order to convict someone of murder. And those are the things you have to prove on an individual level for each one of these people and show how their special interests benefited. You know, Dick Cheney, Halliburton, Bechtel, Raytheon certainly had motives for the military industrial complex. He's a direct connection, you know, but on the other side, you have Paul Bremer, worked inside the buildings and then became the presidential envoy to Iraq, the occupation governor pretty much for the whole situation in Iraq afterward, and what his interests might have been. You have to look at all different stages of the game, and there might even be blackmail going on. You have people Rudy Giuliani, this corrupt governor of New York, where he's involved in destroying all the evidence from Ground Zero. And maybe he didn't rig the buildings or see that going on under his watch, but I'm sure they had enough dirt on him that they could say, listen, you're going to destroy all this and keep your mouth shut about it and go along with it.
That's right. Play ball or else, you know, yeah, always happens.
Yeah, and look at the people that didn't play ball and what happened to them.
That's right. Yeah. There were many of them were just simply lost in the buildings that day too, you know?
Oh, I'd imagine there were dozens of people that were coordinated deaths on that day to get rid of potential future whistleblowers, someone that knew too much, you know, and all the people working inside those buildings, you know, who knows what kind of scandals were going on in those offices. And they had a lot of those people just be all at meetings at the same day, like Richard Grove's testimony that I mentioned. He was told to go to a meeting on the 93rd floor, which where the plane hit, right where the first plane hit. And his fellow friends from who worked at Marshall McLennan and knew about the scandal were told to go to that meeting to bring forth their evidence for like a preliminary hearing. And so they brought not only, you know, were killed in the attacks, but they brought all their evidence with them. And it's like, come on now. Like, obviously that is a, you know, that was intentional. That's someone. And why? And then the guy is going to participate in the meeting from a televised video conference from another building.
It's like 9/11 is a node point in history, and I think it's you who are pointing out that too in the beginning of the video, that is basically it's a dividing point in history. It's like the before and the after. It's an incredible intense event that where so many different lines basically converge, different agendas, different motives, different groups, different people. Some days I'm amazed that they managed to pull it off, and other days as I look at it, it seems sloppy and it was not performed right. And I go back and forth on this all the time. It's very, very difficult to like, are they geniuses or did they just get lucky here? You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, there was lots of mistakes that were made that day. They leaked the news article to the BBC a little bit too early, and it was reported that Building 7 fell a couple minutes before it actually did. And there was a lot of mistakes and sloppy things that definitely went on that day. Some of them I'm not so sure were accidental. Some of them may be a lot of the aircraft anomalies and things that happened appear a lot of intentional, you know, confusion was added into that whole scenario that day as well, with the false radar blips on the screens, and who knows if the radar data from that day is even accurate with all the stuff that they were doing and war games that they were conducting, and how they've covered up all the different avenues of it. You know, even with the official story of the towers being forwarded, why the buildings came down, and they were promoting the fire and the plane impacts, you know, story from the beginning. And they even had MIT professors like with these articles less than like a week later explaining, you know, how the buildings came down with, you know, the plane impacts and all sorts of other things. But it's really, yeah, it is a dividing point in history. There's a before 9/11 and after 9/11, you know, period. We often hear them refer to this as a post 9/11 world. You know, the world changed on 9/11, and it did. It changed in a lot of ways, and how those ways and what groups those changes benefited is something that people really need to look at. It gave us the unlimited excuse for a ongoing war in the Middle East. It gave us the government an excuse to restrict civil liberties here at home and abroad, to incorporate criminal agencies like the TSA and the Department of Homeland Security, which is an unneeded agency. We didn't need that before. We had the air defenses and everything that could have protected us from 9/11 before. We had the intelligence. We had Abel Danger, which identified Mohammed Atta almost a year before the attacks. We had everything in place to prevent this from happening, and we didn't need any of these extra measures or security measures. We didn't need a Patriot Act. We don't need warrantless wiretapping and checkpoints and they didn't need that. They never needed it. It's such a sad excuse for the surveillance state. And that's another double-edged sword technology right there.
sure. Oh, definitely. No, it's incredibly risky business that they're involved in here. Although it's been tremendously beneficial to the elite, to those who pulled it off, to government, for the surveillance state to end up in this scenario, basically, where you're like treating everybody like criminal in the current time. It's also been very risky because you have this, you have a side effect to it. And we've brought this up with so many guests, and I think it's, again, just worth mentioning that there's probably more people who are now doubting and questioning looking into, they're generally suspicious for, you know, anything that they're being told because of 9/11. And because of this, you have a tremendous, you know, so-called awakening happening here in a sense. And that means that this is another double-edged sword. It's like they can't do an event like this and not get a side effect to it. And in that regard, I think that means that something really, really positive has also come with a really, really negative event. So things seem to balance themselves out in a kind of interesting way. But what's your take on that?
That's interesting. Well, I definitely don't think that they were counting on the internet, number one. They didn't take that into account. Obviously, they took enormous risks that day, and those have to be for a reason. There has to be something that, you know, that needed them to inspire them to do this. And I believe the best explanation I've heard for that is the issue of peak oil and understanding how important those strategic last remaining world oil reserves are, especially leveraging them for geostratic hegemony, as is pointed out in Zbigniew Brzezinski's book, The Grand Chessboard. They needed those oil fields and basically not only just to control the oil for us, it's not just for us, it's for Asia and Europe, and controlling the flow of oil to those countries and the production sites of that oil for those last remaining world oil reserves, which if World War III comes, it will be fought over those last remaining oil reserves. But it is an extremely risky scenario in order to take that. And I think it's interesting that you point out that, you know, it's caused this global awakening and it's caused this shift. And it's that one big event that so many people it's using them to wake up to a much bigger picture that, you know, hey, we need to like do something about this. And seriously, before it's too late, you know, the problem really is that bad. So it's kind of having that, that other reverse effect. It's kind of funny how something that was done for those selfish reasons could, have this awakening result and affect a lot more people, in ways that has really caused a lot of people to wake up and start, seeing that, you know, hey, this is a enormous problem. There are serious problems with the world and, you know, what some of the solutions might be for dealing with them you know, getting off the addiction to oil and energy technologies and how our demand for energy is going to ultimately consume us. And if we can't find a way to wean ourselves off of that limited supply of energy, then it's going to just run dry. And before we know it, it's going to like... I mean, it's like a soft drink where you get to the bottom and, you know,
yeah,
it's going to dry up, man.
There is nothing more, exactly. And that's when we get into some of the other things we began talking about and these interesting new technologies and again, how if they end up in the hands of you know, people, it would be a really, really, really good thing. It would be something that would be liberating. And at the same time, then we have this possible danger that if we're talking about unlimited sources of power, there is anything from weaponry involved in that into other things that could be used detrimental. But at some point we have to take a risk, right? We have to be ready to go into one area or another so that we can kind of break out of our pattern that we're doing, right? We have to trust that it will work out. Otherwise, we'll sit, you know, on our asses, not daring to do anything because whatever we do, it's going to be dangerous, right?
Right. I mean, no matter what, it's always, you create any of these technologies, they're going to be a double-edged sword. It's really about, I would say that our ethics system needs to be responsible enough to say, hey, we're going to use these for the right things and I'm not going to, you know, use these for the wrong things. But also at the same time, what you could consider as some of the wrong things that you could use these devices for, others could argue that they're for the right things, like creating a super virus to wipe out the population and reduce the population. There are some scientists or people that would argue that the population needs to be reduced so that they're actually helping by doing something like that.
Yeah, there are all kinds of philosophies out there.
Right. So yeah. This is ethics. I mean, this is you know, what we're getting at and what we're trying to, you know, come to the best mutual agreements for what's best for everyone and or what's best for me and may not be best for you, though.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think in many cases, it could probably be argued that the people who we can, you know, see make great evils in the world today are on some level actually justifying their own behavior. They actually think that they're actually doing it for something good. And again, it could be basically right. anything, but they know it's a tough decision, you know, but someone has to make it, you know.
Bill Gates with the depopulation agenda or something like that.
Right.
You know, these people believe that what they're doing is validated and for the betterment of, you know,
of all, the population, the greater good.
Or the human race. The human good. It will actually benefit us. And it's kind of... I don't know. It's disturbing because a lot of things which solve that problem. Yeah, the depopulation. The population growth problem can arguably a serious issue. And
there are others who you know have science that speaks against that. I've heard various things. I guess the biggest problem with that is it's about. Good realty, so to speak. But that's a technological question as well, because look at how many deserts there are out there, for example. But if we could find a way of reversing that, which some people actually claim they have technology and things at their disposal to actually reverse that. There is a lot of land on this planet. There is a lot of, you know, resources. And if it's used right, it's a very good system. And it's there because it is renewing itself, you know, and it's living off the energy from the sun. And so I think it's all about just doing it right, basically.
The Sahara forest, it could be, you know, like
they're
it
right.
could,
yeah.
it could be doing, and that's, I think we need to develop and produce a lot of those technologies, especially if we're going to eventually hope to go to other planets and terraform those planets, their surfaces and grow, be able to turn the moon into into Endor, like,
or something. Right, right. Yeah. Farming the moon. Yeah.
Farming the moon. Yeah. And good not stuff. Just cheese.
Good stuff. Now, yeah, let's see if there's any points here, Jeremy, you'd like to kind of wrap up on. I guess we've talked a lot of different things and covered a lot of good ground. And it's always interesting to have a new voice with us here on the program and kind of pick your brain a little bit about that. But is there anything else we've kind of left out or something you'd like to mention before we begin to wrap up here for this time?
I like your pointing out the risks that they took on 9/11 and how those benefited those groups of people. And I sort of look at that as that they needed to take this move at the time. I mean, with the documents that they wrote, like Rebuilding America's Defenses and the documents written by, and the books written by, you know, people like Zbigniew Brzezinski, the Grand Chessboard, you know, this whole strategy of global takeover and the globalists, agenda and how they needed to set that in motion. It boils down to that's the plan that they have, that they're the ones in control right now. And that's what they kind of have. Their plan's pretty much outlined. They're going to try to control this world's last remaining oil reserves and hope that they can be the ones to survive themselves. And if anything goes completely wrong, they can sort of hide in these underground bunkers and wait out the apocalypse.
That's right.
Even possibly release some sort of crazy, you know, bioweapon that would wipe out the population and then die off within a year so that they could just hide out and then come back. I mean, there's a million different ways you could look at it, but what's really, I mean, people thought the world was going to end on December 21st and we're still here. So
some did. Yeah, that's right.
Some did, not all. And, but it's interesting. I think we need to think, we need to step back and take a real look at where we are, how we got here, and where we're going. And I think that a lot of these topics wake people up to that. And that's, you know, why I like to cover them and talk about them and get people interested in them and share my research into them and what things I've learned. And hey, I'm just a human. I make lots of mistakes too. And I'm not right about everything all the time. And important thing is that we can learn and just keep moving. And it's like riding a bicycle. If you got to keep moving in order to stay up. If you slow down and stop, you're just going to fall over. So.
All right. Well, thank you, Jeremy. Good talking to you today. Thank you for obviously sharing your perspective with us. We appreciate it. Let's give out your website again and the other channels, if you will, so that people know where to go when they want to check out more of your work.
Yeah, I have a lot of stuff compiled on alienscientist.com. And also, I'll be posting like news articles and a lot of interesting stuff that I come across on the new Facebook page, facebook.com/alienscientist. I think that's what it is. Yeah. And or you can just search for alienscientist.com on Facebook and find that. I also have a forum with lots of different discussion topics there. And my YouTube channel is youtube.com/alienscientist, one word, no spaces. And if you just search Google for alien scientists, you'll find lots of stuff. And any questions, let's post them, and I'll be happy to answer whatever you want to know. There are different topics you think I should be aware of or look into. Interview requests, people that want to get on a podcast with me. I'm doing a lot of podcasts and stuff now. I'm just looking to reach out and branch out with as many people who are on the same page as me and want to see this, not only the revolution, but what will come after.
Really good stuff. Yeah, excellent, Jeremy. Thank you again. We'll urge people to check out the show notes, obviously, for the website addresses and links directly to Jeremy's Facebook and YouTube channel and everything else. And we'll end on that note. Thank you again, Jeremy. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Henrik.
All right, guys. Thanks for staying with us. We hope you've learned something new. We'll be back in just a few days as we continue to bring you more with William Henry, Paul Levy, Mikkel Jalving, and also a roundtable on Egypt with Chris Dunn, Stephen Mailer, Brian Forrester, and perhaps we'll have some more people joining us on that as well. So lots of new interesting talk radio coming your way soon. Thank you for listening.